Talking Miami Dolphins football, we're talking post-Marino era, Ross, mistakes. We're kind of rehashing history on today's episode. What is up, Dolphin fans? Welcome to another Dolphin Collective. Hopefully you all are having a fantastic Monday. Got the crew with me today, and a big shout out to our sponsor, Prize Picks. You play $5, you get 50 instantly using that promo code HMA. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the second half. But today, like I said, we're kind of rehashing history, looking back, you know. It's not much to talk about, so we got to find some topics to talk about.
This is an important topic because if you do not learn from your past, you're doomed to repeat history.
There you go. Which,
nice. We got to win the game to not lose it.
Yeah. The big question we should address.
Got to fail forward fast.
One more time. Yeah. The big question we should address is what other piece of Dolphin paraphernalia Doug could have been wearing today. It's a little, come on, a little chintzy on the outfits here. Come on, what about Dolphin glasses? Dolphin, you have a Dolphin t-shirt under the hoodie?
I got a sleeveless shirt. Okay. Because it's hot outside, but in my office, I'm right next to the central air, so it's freezing down here. So I was like, am I going to...
sunglasses?
I don't have Dolphin glasses.
Oh, come on.
You got glasses, socks, shoes. It's just shirts and hats.
No underwear. No,
you representing though.
Love it. I get made fun of for wearing my other shirts, and now I'm getting made fun of for wearing my Dolphin hoodies. I can't win on this paddle.
It's a cool hoodie though, I will say that.
Yeah, they need to go back to this, but that's for a different video.
Hoodie, though, I will say that.
Yeah, they need to go back to this, but that's for a different. So, best post Marino era. Let's start with Omar on that one. What would you say is the best post Marino era?
I'm definitely going with the Tua McDaniel era because you had multiple playoff runs. Yes, you had a team that consistently declined in December and January. You had a quarterback who wasn't healthy for one of the, I think, how many playoff runs did he make? McDaniel went to the playoffs twice. Yeah. I mean, if you want to say it was the Wanstead era, we can, but that team never looked like a contender to me. The 2023 Dolphins looked like a contender before they fell off from an injury standpoint.
I agree. Had nothing to do with the failure to beat any decent teams, even without injuries.
So did the Rams.
They were what? What?
The Rams.
What about the Rams?
They won a Super Bowl and be one winning team.
Oh, you talking about 1999? Okay. Yeah, but Dolphins were not as good as the Rams were.
But I know, but you know what I'm saying?
Here's the problem. The problem with that premise, though, is, sadly, it's a low bar. You're talking about not a lot to choose from. You're talking about an organization that has not won a playoff game since December 30th, 2000. I thought, crazy as it sounds, even though nobody ever accused Jay Fiedler of being a great quarterback, the 2002 Dolphin teams might have been, if you want to talk about injuries, you got an injury to your starting quarterback when they were 5-1 after winning a Sunday night game at Denver with Ricky Williams in the midst of the best rushing season in Dolphin history by far and a championship caliber defense. I think that team could have made some noise. Instead, they went 2-4 with the backup quarterback, and that derailed their season and then gagged in the season finale. But I despise disagreeing with Omar, but if you want to look at the best for more than just 1 year, yeah, I guess you'd have to say the the McDaniel early years, but even then, they weren't close, if we're going to be honest about it.
Yeah. You know, you look at the Wanstead era, you know, lost the division title, lost the wild card. I can't believe they never made it to the playoffs with Ricky Williams in 2022 and 2023. It's crazy. Because that team was... I know Fiedler gets a lot of crap. I like Fiedler. Fiedler, you know, he's not the best quarterback we've had, you know, since Marino, but Fiedler was good. I liked Fiedler. For me, yeah, it's a toss-up between, you know, Wanstead's time and McDaniel's time. But you could definitely look at 2023, and, you know, that was before the wheels fell off of that thing. That was a good team. It was a really good team when the team was semi-healthy. But that team, throughout the whole season, was always someone. I think they had the starting offensive line, what, two games, three games? And it was just, it kept falling apart. Yeah, so. If they had better luck in 2023, but they didn't.
You make your own luck in the NFL.
If grandma had one, she'd be grandpa.
TD, what's your era?
It's the Dave Wanstead era, and it's not even close. And I'm going to make a good argument why it's not even close, okay? Those first four seasons of Dave Wanstead with Fiedler, because remember, Ricky was on the back end of it, but Chris Chambers was all the way throughout that time. This is when I first really, really, really fell in love with the game and the Dolphins in general. I used to be a little boy, you know, watching my daddy cry with Marino throwing the duper nim, but I start understanding the game here. And here's why it's not close. This team averaged over 10 wins in those first four seasons with Wanstead. 11 wins, 10 wins, 9 wins, right? Now, McDaniel only reached 11 wins one time. And here's the kicker. That was back in a 16-game season. That was back in 16 games. McDaniel got the luxury of 17 games. So one less game and still outperformed with a much worse roster. Their roster can't even contend with the McDaniel roster. So it was more exciting. Nah, they can't contend. What are we going to compare it to wide receiver core, Allen?
The defense was better. Sorry.
Much better. Much better.
Oh, yeah. Was it Jason Taylor still rocking?
Yeah. Tim Bowen's out there. Patrick Surtain's out of Madison.
Yeah, I get that. But let's not act like we were short of really good players on McDaniel's defense. Don't forget, he still had – he still has some studs on the defensive side of the football who are now.
And how many finished out the season?
I understand that, but at the same token, he still had a, in my opinion, overall better roster. It wasn't really a drop off at the running back position. We know Ricky's better than anything we've had, but at the same token, the production was just as good with McDaniel's team than with Ricky, even though he ran his behind off. And I remember being at that Jags game, at a Jags game when Ricky ran for the Dolphins. I'll never forget looking at this man's leg. One leg is like the size of my stomach. And trust me, I got a little stomach. It's coming down, but I got a little stomach. This man was massive. Like his legs, I've never seen legs that big. But go ahead.
I never saw the big leg Ricky Williams. I only saw the vegan vegetarian Ricky Williams.
I saw it 15 feet. You know that touchdown out of the end zone in Jacksonville? The 99 yarder or whatever that Ricky ran from the backed up to the end zone in Jacksonville. I was literally right behind him, literally behind the goalpost at the game, and they're massive. I mean, his legs are like massive. It's ridiculously massive. But
I've seen big legs, big calves.
Now that his was crazy, but that's the best era, man. Because you didn't expect much from that team, but he still had them performing at a playoff level. And 10 wins didn't make the playoffs twice. 11 wins didn't make it once. It was harder.
Ran him out of town. He still ran him out of town.
Whoa. TD, let's. One time in 2003, they were 10-6 and make the playoffs. They never missed
it. Yeah. Well, 9-7 as well. Remember, Mike McDaniel correct. Made the playoffs in a 9-8 season.
Correct.
And so, I mean, this is why that whole McDaniel area, I know we saw playoffs, but it's also, it was an easier role. You get an extra game in today's NFL.
Why so, does that make it easier? I don't think that makes it easier. I think that makes it harder.
Here's why. Brian Flores had a better record and didn't make the playoffs one year before McDaniel came. Brian Flores won 10 games, if I'm not mistaken, and missed the playoffs, 10-6. Mike McDaniel made it at 9-8.
Yep. So here's the thing, TD, the one argument against the ones that team and you kind of like has me, you have me a bit a little leaning toward your position here.
That's right.
The one argument is that those teams made the playoffs twice and their playoff losses were 27-0 and 20-3. Like, if they got to the playoffs, they could do nothing offensively. And at least even the Buffalo loss in McDaniel's first year, was it 32-29 or 35-30? I forget the score. They lost by three.
Thanks to Skylar Thompson. You're right.
They lost because of Skylar Thompson.
Oh, really? That's what we're doing?
If he didn't throw those two interceptions,
we're not going to relive this. We're not. Like, that.
Those big opportunities, Jalen Waddle,
we know who Skylar Thompson is now.
Are you talking about the underthrows?
Oh, stop it, Doug. There was some big time plays in that game where they just dropped it.
And he threw two interceptions, did he not?
Yeah. And what did you
expect? Turnovers on defense. That's not why they lost. I mean, they lost because
it would have helped if he didn't throw two interceptions that gave the Buffalo Bills scores.
Well, one of them wasn't his. It went off of, if I'm not mistaken, Waddle's hands.
Did Brian Flores really win 10 games with Miles Gaskin as a running back?
Yes, sir, he did.
I will say this, though, when you talk about the talent, I would take a defense with Edwala Gounlier 15 sacks and Jason Taylor 13 sacks any day of the week. That Wanstead defense. If we had that Wanstead defense in 2023, forget about it.
But don't
Super Bowl winners.
You're focusing on the pass rushers. Do not forget that they had Madison and Surtain at
corner. Oh, 100%. But right now we would give our left leg to have two double digit sack players in that pass rush right now. You know,
or even it helps when you have
cornerbacks. Right, like, Madison and Surtain.
Helps when you have cornerbacks draping.
Oh, 100%. But I'm just saying, get 13.
But the talent we brought in under McDaniel's defense should have been able to perform at a better level than they did.
They were on a heater in 2023 until all of a sudden that Baltimore game arrived and couldn't stop anything, and then the injuries like on top of everything else.
Yeah, I don't see that much talent on the 2023 team defensively. Like, no. Okay,
Christian Wilkins had 9 sacks, Sealer had 10. Van Ginkle had 6.
Yeah.
Then you had Baker, David Long.
Dude, look at the players. Stop focusing on the numbers.
Yeah, we understand.
Sealer and Wilkins at D tackle. You had Jalen Ramsey and X.
Yes, but quarterback. We're comparing this defense to the defense I was just talking about. Which one is better? Which one had more talent?
It's close.
I don't know, Kader Kohou and Xavier Howard versus Pat Surtain and Sam Madison.
Ramsey wasn't here?
No.
Yes, he was in 2023.
Yes, he was. Oh, yeah.
He was a Pro Bowler.
That's a wash. I'm sorry, but that's a wash.
I don't know.
Ron Holland was still here.
Are we forgetting about Zach Thomas?
Yes,
Zach Thomas. We even touched the linebackers. At one point, we had Zach Thomas Jr. Seau.
That wasn't Prime Jr. Seau, though. Be honest, that was 2003.
Uh-huh. It was a good defense, but I just feel like the talent we brought in, it should have been from a talent standpoint, because Chubb, you still had
Jalen Phillips, Andrew Van Ginkle was kind of a blitzing inside linebacker ish.
Chubb was there.
That Titans game, that's all I could think about. When he threw his helmet.
You see, I think of Chubb. I think of the Baltimore game. Why his ass is on the field?
Well, yeah. Not like it really would have mattered when it came to the Kansas City game in the grand scheme of things. It would have helped, but
yeah. But then it also cost him 2024. I mean, everything that happened with Mike McDaniel, to me, that might be the one that pissed me off.
Didn't Van Ginkle get hurt in that game too?
I think so.
In the Ravens game.
Baltimore game, or did he get hurt in the Buffalo game the week after?
Let me see. I can pull it up.
Jim and Baker both got X and Chubb got hurt in the Baltimore game. I think Baker X,
and Chubb people, and the special teamer guy.
Chubb was out for Buffalo. Xavier Howard was out for Buffalo. Jesus Christmas.
Yeah, it was a bad stretch.
Was questionable for Buffalo.
Yeah, Waddle was hurt.
And that was Jonnu's year, right? 2023?
No, it was
24. Mm-hmm.
24, yeah. Tight end in 23?
Smythe and...
Gesicki, I think.
He was still here?
No, Gesicki was gone by then.
Smythe? Only Smythe. Really?
Y'all are sure it wasn't Jonnu? How many years did Jonnu give us?
Smythe, Tyler Croft, Julian Hill, and Tanner Connor were your tight ends in 2023.
Okay. So was that the Mostert HN year? Or?
No, that was, Mostert.
Yeah, Mostert HN.
Okay.
And that's where Mostert had 1,000 yards.
21 touchdowns.
Where is...
We're supposed to be solving problems here. We're not living through memory lane. Break years.
You're the one who just said that if you have to learn from your mistakes or you're going to repeat.
Yeah. But what do we learn? What do we learn? Quarterback's not good enough.
Just for clarity, Andrew Van Ginkle got hurt in the Buffalo game.
Got it.
God, the wheels really fell off at the end of that season. Jeez.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is Ross to blame? Go ahead. Topic number two. Ross to blame.
I think Ross is to blame in the aspect of he brought in the wrong people to be talent evaluators. Because obviously he doesn't know what to do when it comes to the football aspect of things. And if that's the case, then you bring in guys who you trust who know what they're doing around him. And I think he, not knocking Andrew Van Ginkle, not Andrew Van Ginkle, not knocking Garfinkel, but I still don't think he has the guys around him that will really... I think bringing in Sullivan and Halfley helps, but I think that's the biggest knock to Stephen Ross.
You don't know that.
He spent the money, he got the stadium built, and he did what he had to do money-wise, but when it came to being able to evaluate talent, that's where the team fell apart. That's my fault.
I think an organization, what I've learned throughout life is leadership is important, and your organization will only go as far as your leadership can take it, and it starts at the top. I think there's a reason why the business side of the Dolphins organization is gold standard, gold star, and that's Tom Garfinkel. Why don't we have a same level of football executive running the football side of the organization? You can't look at Chris Greer and Tom Garfinkel and say these are the same. And the fact that you couldn't recognize that. Same thing with Mike Tannenbaum. You can't look at Mike Tannenbaum and Garfinkel and say these are the same. The fact that you can't recognize that, can't acknowledge that, and consistently stayed with mediocre leadership, mediocre talent evaluators, I have to acknowledge that it's Steve Ross's fault. Now, he swung big for the fences a lot of times, but how many times did he deliver? And the signing of Halfley and Sullivan, or the infusion of doing it all at the same time, that's great in theory, but I don't know, and I'm not sure, and we have no proof that he has the right people. I mean, let's be real about it.
We have no proof he doesn't have the right people.
We have no proof that he doesn't have the right people, but they hired Jeff Halfley the same day that Buffalo fired their head coach. I'm sorry, but
you
should have had a conversation. You should have just had an exploratory conversation, but you're too busy and too worried about Tennessee or the Raiders going out and signing Halfley if he leaves you You know, I'm sorry, but scared money don't make real money. And that was an organization that operated in a fashion that scared. And I feel like Buffalo's head coach, why does his name escape me?
McDermott.
But yeah, McDermott, he's probably going to be a Mike Vrabel a year from now. Whereas he's going to.
Time out. I'm going to stop you here. Seriously, I let you go. Let Sean McDermott have success without Josh Allen at quarterback. Then we'll decide. The Bills, who have been knocking on the door for many, many years, decided we ain't getting where we want to go with that guy. You want to rush and jump over there? It wasn't like this kind of same kind of situation where there was a clash in Tennessee with Mike Vrabel. I think Sean McDermott wishes he were Mike Vrabel as a head coach. And like I said, let me see him have some success without Josh Allen. Then we'll see how good he is.
It's like Adam Gase with Peyton Manning.
Thank you.
Bill Belichick with Tom Brady.
I mean, but Josh Allen did become a good quarterback underneath him. He wasn't always a good quarterback.
Oh, sure. Anymore. Yes, I know. He developed his
under
magic.
Him or Dayball or
big under Sean McDermott. Dude, seriously?
The arm got accurate.
If there's coaching kudos to be handed out there, how much of them go to Sean McDermott or I don't know, the offensive Dayball. Coach? Worked with him,
Joe Brady.
Josh Allen was an absolute freak.
Ken Dorsey. He's had multiple.
No, it was somebody else before Ken Dorsey. Ken Dorsey came along.
Side note, little quick Brady. Side note. Do you hear the rumblings happening over in Buffalo right now with Joe Brady as a head coach?
No. What's
a lot of it is the players coming around and saying how it's so he's so cool. And they're blasting music, and it's fun to be around. And, you know, he's like a friend. And the rumor, and again, this is coming from Buffalo Bills fans and stuff, it's kind of like they're a little hesitant with Joe Brady because of how friendly he is, I guess you could say. He's like one of the boys, and they don't know how that's going to pan out. Like, there might not be a lot of discipline with this team. Kind of reminds me of someone else. I just thought it was funny to throw it out there.
I have an issue with Joe Brady from this standpoint. How many coaches has he snaked to get to where he is? Mm. And going back to LSU.
I was going to say, didn't he do some things in LSU as well?
Yeah. I mean, and hey, more props to the climbers of this world and the people who do what they need to do to get where they want to go. You know, can we trust him? I don't know.
And answer the question that was first posed, though, also, because Omar kind of covered every single solitary angle of it, so not a whole lot left to say. I will say this. If you look at the organizations in the NFL that traditionally struggle, Bengals, although they've gotten a little bit, but they can't get over them, Arizona Cardinals, Cleveland Browns, and we have to put the Dolphins in the same. What do they have in common? You have to look at ownership. And if you look at the organization that generally speaking are very good year in and after out, Baltimore Ravens, I'll throw it before Omar does, because Omar's got this for the Baltimore Ravens, but they have a very good owner. Yeah. The Eagles have a very good owner in Jeffrey Lurie. Certainly not to be confused with Jeffrey Loria, who
I don't even know if it's ownership with the people, the organizations that you're praising have good leadership.
But they hire the right people. Right. Same with the Roonies in Pittsburgh. They hire the right
Steelers. Yeah.
Yes. And that there's not a coincidence that certain teams are good basically year in and year out because they make it a point to hire the good right people. In
place. Let me ask you this before we get to TD and his thoughts on Stephen Ross. Somebody, you know, Fun Gaming Florida had a very good comment. Ross is to blame if you were caught tanking and paying a coach $100,000 to lose each game. Shake my head. Let me ask you this, kind of coinciding with that. If he surrounded himself with better people, would they have warned Stephen Ross about that and then trying to get, you know, Sean Payton and the whole Tom Brady thing? Because we've lost multiple first round picks and have lost things because of what he was trying to do. If he was surrounded by better people, would they tell him, don't do that? Or was that a different situation where they're like, yeah, let's try, but be better sneaky wise?
It was a 1-3 they lost. By the way, here's my whole thing about that. And I do not understand, when you hired Brian Flores in 2019, clearly the Dolphins had a plan in place. Mm-hmm. And I understand it's very delicate to tell a coach, listen, this is what we're thinking of. We don't want to win too many games because we have the long-term future in mind. Are you on board with this? But to completely ignore that and then have Brian Flores like immediately be like, hell no, I'm not losing games. A little bit of a wrench in it. You what?
Don't hire him.
That threw a big wrench in the whole plan.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a situation where you're supposed to know what's not supposed to be said. But you know, I did the interview with Flores. He was very adamant. He would have never taken that job if he knew that those were the intentions of the organization. And that's why you see this lawsuit about people hiring African Americans to put them in situations where to fail. And that lawsuit is, it trust me, if you know Brian Flores, it ain't being settled. And at now that they're at the discovery point and Tech's history of owners of billionaires is about to be examined, I'm sure the NFL would pay millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars to make this go away. However, it is not going away because this isn't about money for Brian Flores.
I expect a resolution in 2037. They're gonna drag the crap out of that.
I think they could only drag it out for so long, but yes, it's we are getting to the discovery point, which is going to be extremely fascinating. We also have to acknowledge that there was an era of struggle under Huizenga that matches the era of struggle under Ross. And Huizenga hired the right people. Nick Saban was the right person, supposedly. You know, Poupard likes the old grumpy man, as Poupard generally likes old grumpy.
I did not like Saban. I don't like Saban. He's a bad kind of grumpy. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so why was Saban not the right person?
Well, because he couldn't relate to NFL players. I mean, he tried to treat them like college players, and that didn't work. And yet, as an X's and O's kind of guy, that guy was good. And of course, there was the unfortunate Culpepper over Breeze decision in the offseason of 2026 that kind of derailed things a little bit.
TD, what, you know, is Ross to blame for the lack of success?
I'm one of the rarest people that believe he is not to blame at all. I think at the ownership position, you don't know what you got wrong until you know what you got wrong. Number one, at that level, it takes time to figure things out. It's not like coaches are going to get fired before you figure it out. GMs can get fired before you figure it out. But at least he's consistently been firing and trying to figure it out. So he spends every penny he possibly can for his regime that he brings in. That's never been a question. He provides whatever they need without question. Now, the whole Flores thing with that, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. At least he cares, okay? I don't like
how better at it.
I thought Flores, this situation was done wrong, but you can't hurt the man from trying. I mean, I'm just saying, you can't, and especially it was a great plan, Sean Payton and Brady. Come on, man. I mean, the man is trying to bring a Super Bowl to Miami. So he gives Chris Greer an opportunity. Chris Greer bombs it. He goes all in on a guy, and he's sitting back hoping that it transforms. It's not transforming, but then you go spend money to try to help it out, and you make a good team with all of these Tyreek and everybody. You're like, okay, maybe this is going somewhere. Then it hits a brick wall. All right, you know what? It looks like I finally have an issue in the office. And here's the signal that tells me he's on the right track. He didn't go deep in the front office and say, okay, find me the next GM. He went outside. You know, who was it? What's his name? Who he hired to find Jeff Hafley and John Eric Sullivan? But regardless, he at least went to a football guy. You know, he went to a guy who knows the game and knows solid coaches and stuff like that. So, and we don't know. This may fail.
He's always been doing that with Carl Peterson. Here's my thing.
Here's my thing. Because I think, you know, Alan might agree with me because me and Alan kind of made the same face when TD said that, you know, 17 years, right?
Oh, no.
He kept Chris Greer for 9 years. Nine. And after fail, after fail, after fail, after fail, he kept, for a person who adamantly was against taking Tua Tagovailoa, you are okay with keeping Chris Greer, and then he gave him a contract extension, and it's like, you can't sit there as the owner and give Joe Philbin an extra year, and then you bring in Adam Gase, and then you give Mike McDaniel an extra year and send out a letter saying, oh, you know, we're not okay with status quo, when the next year was literally status quo going 2-7. Like, at some point, you got to blame the owner.
Here's why that's not fair. Whenever you throw out he gave Chris Greer 9 years, okay? Think about the 9 years. Two of them were Brian Flores. You thought you were on the right track. That whole debacle with the losing the first round pick, that was a wrench, like we just discussed. You know, oh man, Flores ain't down for it. That threw us in a wrench. So we had to adjust. They get rid of Flores. And remember, they drafted Tua. 3 years in, is he the guy? But then we have a great season. We have a season. It's like, oh, maybe let me sit back a little and see this a little more. It was the circumstances. The most brutal part for the Miami Dolphins, the defining moment, was that contract, because it was the year before that, how well the team performed. And then you had injuries that people could use as an excuse of the derailment. What is the owner supposed to do? What is he supposed to do at that point? It's like, I gotta see it out. If you playing poker, I'm pot committed. I'm already leveraged 70% in. I gotta just see how it turned out at this point. All in.
Go ahead and defend the decision to bring back Joe Philbin in 2015 when Omar backed me up on this. Like, was there a soul who thought that was a good idea, that it wasn't gonna turn out bad? And then he brought him back.
By that time, we knew he couldn't coach.
How long Ross been the owner?
17 years.
17. So we're talking about 11 years ago. Man, this is early on. He's still figuring it out, man.
Yeah, He's still figuring it out.
17 years.
At that time, bringing him back, though, that's early stages, man.
I remember one like owner shooting.
5 or 6 years in. And
you know, you're a new owner, and you're those who advise you are telling you in this game, you got to stick things through. You got to, you know, let it play out. I mean, he's not a football guy. He's going to go with what the people around him are telling him. But I think that he's making slight minuscule changes to the people around him.
He or
his son. You're going to start calling him Malik Ross because you're kind of.
Oh, dang.
You're a hater.
To address TD's point and what Doug said, 9 years of Chris Greer is not acceptable, but let's be fair and acknowledge that many of those years were under Mike Tannenbaum as the top executive of football decision making. And Mike Tannenbaum is not a talent evaluator. Then we moved on from him. Then we put Chris Greer in power. Obviously, Chris Greer does not exude leadership. And I'm pretty sure Ross didn't realize that he couldn't draft until probably 2025, maybe, 2002, because we didn't have draft picks in that stretch. We were giving them away for top players. But when you realize you have to give away your draft picks because you're not very good at drafting, that should have been a hint to you.
By the way, can I? I'm going to stick up here for a second because I know Mike Tannenbaum gets dumped on quite a bit. And Omar just said he's not a talent evaluator. For the record, the New York Jets' best era, basically, since they won that Super Bowl in 1969 or whatever it was 2010, 2011, when they made the AFC Championship game in back-to-back years when their GM/VP of football operations was Mike Tannenbaum. For the record.
Just to go off of what Omar said, you think he didn't find out until he was a bad drafter until recently? Like, that man, he took over in 2019. I will give him that, right? 2019 is when it was Chris Greer's show. That man couldn't draft
at all. When do you find that out, though, Doug? Some players come on in year three.
Yeah, but here's my point, right? you still gave him an extra year again. Not only did you give him an extra year after Brian Flores, when you fired Flores, when they both should have been fired, because he started 1-7, so then you give him more time. Okay, the first 2 years, hey, this is looking good. Then you had 2023. Then you go 2-7 again.
2023 okay. Screwed everybody.
At this point in 2024, you know how Chris Greer can draft, sign people, and his talent evaluation. It ain't good. And you know but what? Think, you know what? Stephen Ross already gone, though. Gave him an extra year, like he did with so many of his previous coaches and GMs, where he's like, let's play. You can't keep let's playing it out. The good organizations know when to move on. Hence the Baltimore Ravens moving on from John Harbaugh.
I don't think he gave him an extra year. I thought the writing was already on the wall, but you're so pot committed. Hey, it's okay for him to sit in place for right now because I got to play some of these contracts out too. Like we were really in a bad position in 24-25. I don't think that he, I really don't think that he looked at Chris Greer as a long-term all last year. But last case I'll make for Stephen Ross. This is the last case I'll make. The one thing all fan bases hate about their owners, if they have this type of owner, is when we're all saying, oh, he only care about making money. He only care about jersey sales. He only care about, like, you see the moves and everything are geared towards that. I can't say that about Stephen Ross. He only care about winning and bringing, like.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I could see. Sure. That's where
I think he won the Super Bowl in Miami. And I think that's his priority over money. I really don't think, because he got his cash cows. I don't think the Dolphins he look at
Dolphins
as a
are his cat. Dolphins are his cash cow. He's used Dolphins to leverage his businesses. Uses the Dolphins like a bank. And smart business strategy from
he made a comment during one of those business conferences, press conferences he gave in Palm Beach, where that what you just said about I love the Dolphins, I just want them to win, that's what matters most. It was like wrong answer. And I don't remember the quote.
The Dolphins, he basically was like, the Dolphins are my bank. I borrow money from that from my organization. Yes.
That's just billionaire talking.
But in fairness, he spares no expense. He is driven by enhancing his reputation. He does not like a bad reputation. And no, I don't think he's driven by
and money. Making this money.
This is a passion for him. But it's embarrassing to him, and I remember vividly one conversation I had with him in an NFL owners meeting back when he used to talk to us, like, very candidly. And in that conversation, he was just like, he's like, I've learned a lot from my failures in recent years. And I remember this vivid quote. He's like, in my world, what I do is I throw money at my problems. If I need a new leadership, I just go out and go buy the Tom Brady. I can't do that in this world. Now, then he tried and failed, but he's like, that's not how this game is played. And then there also are years where it feels like these NFL owners, the established ones, the Jerry Joneses of the world, they kind of big boy the new guy. And they kind of, hold them down and kind of, you stay down there in your little lane over there. And Ross is at the point where he's got a little cachet. He's helped the NFL learn many things about expanding the brand. He is the driving force behind the initiatives in international game and getting the international dollar. So, now he's got a little power. He's got a little juice. The question is, and he's got a great reputation amongst executives and agents and things like that. The question is, can he make good decisions? Can he identify and evaluate talent? And I will say this again. We don't know this because we don't know Sullivan. We don't know Halfley. And we will now learn if he has learned anything about hiring people and putting people in charge of a football organization.
Yeah.
We will learn if there are clear signs that it's not working and he hangs on too long. That's when we'll learn. He can't there because there's no foolproof way of knowing whether these guys are going to be it.
There is talent evaluation and talent development. Mm-hmm. That's been a major issue for this organization.
I understand that, but if the guy has never been the primary decision maker, you don't know exactly which guys he advocated for unless you have a complete rundown of everybody who's he's evaluated. So there is guesswork involved in every kind of that hire if there's no track record. The key for Stephen Ross is going to be, hopefully they pan out, then they're both great hires. If they're not, recognizing it quickly enough and then making the switch if needed.
Pivoting.
I will say this, like I said in my beginning statement about this topic, you know, he as an owner, he has no problems paying, especially when it came to signing bonuses and trying to do this and writing checks to get players. That's not Stephen Ross's fault. You know, he will do what he can to make the team better, and he will do what he can to make the organization and everything around it better. Like, that's why we get A pluses in every category we possibly can. It's to me about, like Omar said, the Italian evaluation and surrounding himself with the right people and knowing when to pull the plug. And he has a history of not knowing when to pull the plug and doing the whole, let's see if they can bounce back from this. And that's my biggest knock on Stephen Ross. He will do whatever he can in his power to have this team win. But at the end of the day, you know, he might give, you know, if Halfley and Sullivan, which I hope, and I'm a knock on wood, I hope it doesn't pan out that way. But if they are just another group that can't really evaluate talent and, you know, are a little over their head, he'll give them 4 years instead of realizing after, because we'll know after two, this isn't work. It's like finding a quarterback. You keep drafting one until you find one. I know people don't want to continue going into this circle of new head coach, but you got to keep trying until you find one. And, you know, if you know, like to ask Alan and Omar, how quickly did you know Joe Philbin was not it?
Year one.
Same with Cam Cameron. You know,
before the end of year one.
Exactly. Like, you know, and you got to pull the plug. Like, you just know, look, the players, especially if the players are like, get this guy out of here. Yeah. Then you got to listen, man. You just got to move on and do it right. But let's real quick shout out the sponsor and Prize Picks here. There we go. So this is what TD's got going on. What you got going on with this?
I told y'all, man, I keep cooking, man. I told y'all what to do. Right now I'm on MLB. I'm sticking with the pitchers. They got the over-unders on those pitchers. And remember, I told you, they show you what they've been doing recently. So I just been following trends, man. I go on and I look at a pitcher who has a line of maybe 3.5, but the last 5 games they've been 4 or better. Why not roll with the streak? And this is what the streak's been giving me, wins like this. $15 got me $63.75. Just a little fun. And it gets me into baseball more, watching these games, hoping these guys produce. So shout out to Prize Picks, where you got the opportunity to play $5 to get $50 instantly in lineups. But you got to use code HMA, all right? And make sure that you check out the app. Use the link in the description of the video, because it's available in so many different states, New York, California, Florida. So check out to see if your state applies. And as always, it's very important for us here at Dolphins Collective to remind you, make sure that you play responsibly, okay? If you have a problem with that, there's resources on the site that can help you, because we want those who play to enjoy it and have fun.
You also can do a little Miami Dolphin future stuff as well. Go check it out. Super, super fun. And like TD said, play responsibly. Some of those, and when we're getting to the Miami Dolphin ones, when we get closer to the season, we need to
do a whole show about futures.
Yeah, we're going to make our picks. We're going to do predictions. We're going to do expectations, man. It's only, I know it's a dead time right now, but this, it's only going to heat up the closer we get to September. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Biggest franchise mistake, and then we'll get to some of these donations, because this one's very interesting to me. I'll start it off. I think the biggest franchise mistake is them, and it could be multiple, but missing out on the quarterbacks. How many opportunities did they have in Aaron Rodgers, in Drew Brees? What, 3 times they had a chance at Drew Brees? Matt Ryan, they have made the mistake.
Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, at grabbing quarterbacks. And
you know, Justin Herbert, I'm sorry, what?
I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. And, well, and the funny thing is there is the, you know, I know Ricky left for obvious reasons, but one of the reasons Ricky left, you know, is because he was like, get me a quarterback. And they were like, Jay Fiedler again.
Stop running me 40 times a game is more like it.
Exactly. Get him a quarterback.
He couldn't stop smoking weed.
I think it was more than just that.
No, because he couldn't stop smoking weed in the offseason. When you specifically know the date you're going to be tested, you got to stop smoking a month before that. He did not. And he didn't want to be in the program. He was already in the program, and then that led to long-term suspension. He just retired before he got suspended long-term. But to piggyback on what Doug said, so I can address it, because I'm not going to harp on this too much, but I've said it. I've studied this organization. I've been part of it for all the years that I've been part of it. And the one consistent common thread.
It's a preemptive.
What am I going to say? What am I going to say? Since you know
we don't have any quarterback competitions.
Damn, you do know what I'm about to say. Listen.
It's not predictable.
It's sickening. Sickening, disappointing, despicable that it doesn't matter who it is, how that person plays, what the team feels about that person. Ryan Tannehill is a perfect example. They do not want the quarterbacks to compete. Somebody has to be gifted the job. Even when Tua became the starter, he had not outperformed Ryan Fitzpatrick. The team did not want him in that position. He was gifted the job. It does not matter what has gone on since Dan Marino. They are quarterbacks who start for the Miami Dolphins are always gifted the job. Somebody needs to win it.
It's still happening.
Can I do a little variation on what you said? Because to me, you know how I feel about this notion. Again, there's no quarterback competition in Buffalo, Cincinnati, Dallas, LA, let's see, the two LAs, Seattle, because
they got established quarterbacks.
Because
they got established quarterbacks.
They weren't drafted established.
Patrick Willis competed with Will Levis and lost.
There was a quarterback competition with Justin Herbert and Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor started.
Yes, Tyrod Taylor
started because they weren't ready. They wanted to slow cook Justin Herbert, and then they had a shot.
And he got his job because he got injured. If he had outperformed Tyrod Taylor, he would have been starting ahead of Tyrod Taylor.
They wanted to slow cook him, but remember, it was also the COVID year. The issue with the Dolphins, and it's not just a quarterback, is they have, for some reason, always convinced themselves that the players we have, they're not really good enough right now, but we'll get them. We'll get them there. And so they wind up hanging on to players in key positions for way longer than they have. Talk about the offensive line.
Agree to that.
The offensive line, they keep talking about, well, we were expecting a lot of improvement from the player last year. No, he wasn't good enough last year. Why do you think he's going to be good enough? Ryan Tannehill.
Because they moved him to the right side.
There you go. But other players than that were Ryan Tannehill, they hung on to him as a starter way long past the time when it was obvious he wasn't good enough. Same thing with Tua.
Paid him.
And paid him on top of that. I had zero issue with him remaining the starting quarterback at that time, but not making that long-term commitment. That to me is a bigger issue than the idea of quarterback competition.
Is that what you're thinking? What is your biggest mistake, Alan?
Well, in terms of philosophy and approach, that's one of them. The Dolphins always seem to think that they're mediocre players. They're going to coach them to get good, and that doesn't happen. They've always been overly, like, looking at their poor players through way too rose-colored glasses. That's not the way to operate. And then they've just missed again. They've missed on too many quarterbacks, like you said, at every turn. I mean, starting with maybe the first one. Actually, no, the first one may have been signing Jay Fiedler in free agency when they maybe could have had traded for Matt Hasselbeck. And then the next year you draft a zone cornerback to play in a press defense when you already have Madison and Surtain. So you take Jamar Fletcher instead of Drew Brees because one of your scouts says, I don't like him, he's too short.
Ronnie they did Brown that so over many Aaron times Rodgers.
where they tried to fit a square peg in a round hole, like they did with Charles Harris, where he just didn't fit the scheme he was in, and it was just
he sucked.
He did, yeah, of course, but also he didn't. They put him in a position where he didn't play that in college. And but anyway, Petey, what's your biggest franchise mistake?
Tanking for Tua.
They didn't, though. Unfortunately, they didn't. Yeah,
exactly, because they couldn't even do that right.
But because if they did it, we would have had Joe Burrow.
First of all, Tua should have never been drafted number 5 overall. I said this before he was drafted. And guess what? I was fine with him being drafted in the teens. Trade down. If he's still there, go ahead and take your shot in the teens. Mm-hmm. But drafting him 5th overall with that injury history, number 1, first and foremost, like we just glance over with that. We just keep talking about his play in the NFL and stuff. That injury history should have never been a top 5 pick in the NFL. It's just crazy to me. Number 2, he was a little overhyped coming out of college. I mean, the guy had an arm. He could throw here and there, but you got 5 receivers who all get 8-foot separation, and it's always this mysterious, did you see that throw in the national championship? I urge everybody to go back and watch that throw. It was basically telling you who he was right then and there. It was a blind throw. The man was looking right and cocked back and threw left without even looking. He didn't know if he was open. He just trusted his guys every time. And guess what? DBs and safeties. DBs and safeties in college football told you this every time they beat him. They say, we already know if he look right, don't fall for it. He going to throw it left. Even if it's guarded well, he going to throw it anyway. I mean, this was like there was
and it two worked years. For 4 years till you oh, finally –
It didn't his work.
Finally died.
It didn't work. The speed that he had in college, they duplicated in the NFL. That
it worked for 2 years, not 4 years.
Yes. The separation, Tyreek and Waddle, just like Smith and all of them got in Alabama, that's what worked in
Atlanta.
For him.
We going to see in Atlanta. Listen.
We're going to see it work, Omar, until it doesn't anymore.
Hold on.
Like, period.
Let me just remind you, you have somewhere to be at 1:45.
What time
is it? When we bring up Tua,
take it for Tua. All right, I got you. Take it for Tua. The biggest mistake of this.
When clock stoppage like soccer, when he talks about Tua, we stop the clock.
Get to these donations. But I do agree with what TD said, taking him at 5 and even trying to tank for him. I do agree with that one, 100%. You know, but if we did tank properly, we would have Joe Burrow. Who is another Omar injury?
Fault. It's Omar's fault.
Yeah, Omar was on. He was
the biggest killing tank. Was all on Twitter with the tank trucks and all of that.
Phil with the tenor said, generally speaking, DBs have about the same measurables, average 6 foot, 200 pounds, give or take. All are fast enough to be in the NFL. Why is that cornerback and safeties are not more interchangeable?
Different skill set.
Yeah.
There's also quickness involved. There's the ability to shadow somebody. There's ability to turn your hips. Mm-hmm. There's ability to tackle. If you can't tackle, you're not necessarily going to be a great safety.
I've learned from coaches at the University of Miami that you start everybody at cornerback. If they show you that they can't backpedal and they can't turn their hips well, then they become safeties.
And safeties tend to have to process more.
Mm.
But yes, a different skill set. You'll see a lot of guys later in their career, they go from cornerback to safety.
Yes. Like Aunt Ramsey.
I was about to say, isn't Ramsey making that transition? Keys on my mind said, Omar, why are you making Sully pay for your abusive relationship? It's not just Omar, because I'm getting a lot of flack for, you know, being very apprehensive about Malik Willis. You know, I am in the same boat with Sullivan and Jeff and Malik. Been burned and burned and burned and burned.
Yeah, so you relationships, Doug.
If you beat me for 2 decades, when you raise your hand, I'm gonna flinch.
John Eric Sullivan didn't beat you.
It don't matter. It don't matter. I'm still gonna flinch. If I've been beaten for 2 decades, if you raise your hand, I'm still gonna flinch.
Even if it's not a big one. You still kind of.
Yeah. Hold on. So why y'all not flinching when you see these Atlanta highlights then?
Oh, I am. Did you see, like I said, that one post where they were like, Dolphin fans are punching the air right now. I retweeted that. I'm like, no, we are not.
All that in December.
let's see when the bullets start flying. Get out of here with that. Look at the picture with Lip Jones with Ricky. We were just talking about him. I'm with TD. Ross had at least tried. We still number one in all of those extra areas because of Ross. Just failed from being too loyal to Greer. Yeah. 100% agree with that. Lit.
You knew where the bodies were buried, though. So,
you know,
he signed that NDA when he left. And they were like, "Here's some money. Shut up." And he was like,
"That doesn't prevent you from having to testify in a lawsuit, in a class action lawsuit." So, but anyway,
I'm sorry, TD, but Leno with the tenor says, "TD, aka Master Clickbait. I need a good laugh when Finn's record's going to be again." Want to know from fellas, how confident are y'all in the Dolphins defense? P.S. Josh came from Jordan Palmer.
That's it's not. That's not true. I hate when people give Jordan Palmer credit for, then he's responsible for 30 quarterbacks in the league right now. I'm sorry. Jordan Palmer is not some magical quarterback maker. I give more credence to Ken Dorsey helping him learn how to become a quarterback than I do a lot of
How confident are we? Am I in the defense? I'm not confident at all.
We can't name five legitimate NFL starters on Dolphins defense.
So no, stop it. That's my confidence. We'll see though. It may surprise us, but we'll see. I own you with the tour. It says two wins. You have to score more points than them. MMD.
Mike McDaniel.
Mike McDaniel.
To win, you got to score more points.
Okay, he's right. He's
Mike McDaniel is the modern day John Madden. Deep. And Garp Gump, he said, back from Scotland and grateful for the content. Garp Gump, we are grateful for you and the constant donations and the constant comics. We appreciate you, but we are gonna get out of here. Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Go check out Omar Kelly on the Miami Herald, Alan Poupart, Miami Dolphins on SI, TD Fins Talk, youtube.com/TD, and the Roundtable Sports, and myself on youtube.com/DougieDoWrong. We will see you Friday. Another pre-record. Who's gonna be on the episode this time? Gonna have to watch and find out. But we are out. Peace.